Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway.
I can't breathe! I can't breathe!
No indictment is denial!
We want a public trial!
No indictment is denial!
We want a public trial!
No. When black women are under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
I said, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
What do we want?
Those are protests from three different high-profile cases of black Americans who were killed after encounters with police officers. Oscar Grant was shot and killed by a transit police officer in Oakland, California in 2009. Eric Garner died after being put in a chokehold by a New York City police officer while being arrested in 2014. Sandra Bland died of an apparent suicide in a jail cell in Texas after a confrontational traffic stop in 2015. In each of these deaths, video footage has only shown us part of the whole story. But new developments in all three of these cases show that the systemic lack of transparency in police investigations is particularly bad when it comes to people of color. Phil Stinson is a professor and criminologist at Bowling Green State University in Ohio, and he tracks crimes by law enforcement officials and the legal outcomes. And Cindy Rodriguez is a reporter here at WNYC. Cindy, thanks so much for being with us. And Phil, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Cindy, let's start with you because you are covering the case of Eric Garner, which is happening now. Tell us what's been happening so far.
So, Tanzina, this incident happened, as you said, nearly 5 years ago. And right now, what we're seeing is the disciplinary trial of police officer Daniel Pantaleo. So what's at stake is not whether Mr. Officer Pantaleo will go to prison. What's at stake is whether Officer Pantaleo will lose his job or not.
And Eric Garner's mother, Gwen Carr, spoke outside the courtroom last week. You were there. Let's take a listen to what she had to say.
When they had his hands behind him, can you imagine how hard, especially the size my son was, how hard it is to breathe with your hands behind you, you're on the hot ground, the officers are pouncing on you, and you're asthmatic. Can you just imagine that? Every night when I imagine that, I just have to try to get it out of my head so that I can sleep, because I can't sleep, because then I can't breathe.
Cindy, what has been the atmosphere in the courtroom so far?
Well, you can hear the emotion in Ms. Garner's voice, and Ms. Carr's voice, and it's been a pretty emotional trial. So that video is front and center of her son saying 11 times, "I can't breathe." Ms. Carr walks out of the courtroom, most of the time when the video is played, and it's played a lot because she can't handle hearing it and seeing it. Last week on Thursday, she sat there for the first time, but she had earplugs in. She was looking away. There's also been autopsy photos of her son. She also hasn't been able to sit there. As you can imagine, that's a really difficult thing to see. She's also walked out for that as well. And probably the most emotional moment came last week when the police officers themselves testified. So the supervisors for Officer Pantaleo testified, and these were defense witnesses, right? And they were called in to say that Officer Pantaleo was an outstanding police officer. They also came in to say that Eric Garner was resisting arrest. But what was also revealed were these text messages between a sergeant and a lieutenant on the day Eric Garner died. And those text messages were the sergeant telling the lieutenant that Eric Garner was most likely DOA. And what you see on a screen and what was read out loud was a text message from that lieutenant responding, "Not a big deal. We were effecting a lawful arrest." And that really, there were gasps in the courtroom, and it was a very emotional moment.
Cindy, these text messages are emerging now. How transparent has the New York Police Department been in this process so far?
Well, you know, the video is a lot of transparency, right? You can see exactly what was happening there. So as I said, that's been front and center. This was the first time that we've heard what happened from the police officers themselves. So, you know, 5 years later, we're just now hearing the details.
Phil, I want to bring you in here because I'm wondering if this, what we're hearing from Cindy and specifically with this NYPD case with Eric Garner, does this level of transparency or lack thereof track with what you know of police departments across the country, particularly in cases that involve video, text message, and other types of evidence like that?
Well, the current trial is fascinating, and it's unique in many respects. They use language of there being a prosecutor and a defense attorney, and there's a deputy commissioner who's serving as the judge in this trial. But as Cindy pointed out, it's a disciplinary context. It's not in the criminal justice system. The remedy is not to seek justice. It's not going to be a criminal remedy here. But it's highly unusual. It's highly unusual that a police disciplinary hearing, any public employee disciplinary hearing, would actually be public, that it would be in the form of a trial. You know, we have more than 18,000 state and local law enforcement agencies all across the United States operating in 50 states in the District of Columbia. And there are different laws. There are collective bargaining agreements. There's public sector collective bargaining in some places. Other places, there's employment at will, where they police officers can be fired at any time for anything without cause. So this is unusual. It's not something that we've seen before. It is something that happens in the New York Police Department, that they have public discipline hearings, trials. They've had those for a number of years now, and that's been a long negotiated process. But this is unique, and in terms of transparency, it seems to be a little bit late. You know, it's been almost 5 years since Eric Garner was killed by a New York City police officer, or a group of officers, if you will, and I don't think that it's doing a whole lot there. But what it is doing is peeling back ever so slightly the curtain on the police subculture. We're learning more and more about the way that the police operate. And I think the text messages that we saw there with the supervisors, heard about last week, that's really indicative of the way that the police think.
Cindy, right. You wanted to weigh in.
Yeah, I just wanted to weigh in real quick and say it's true that this is public. Anyone can go. It's a little difficult to get in. The trial room is very small. But what's not public is the result. So a judge, an administrative judge, is hearing this trial. She's going to write a report and send a recommendation to the police commissioner. And the police commissioner has the final say over what to do with Officer Pantaleo. That whole process is protected and is supposed to be confidential. Now, in these very high-profile cases, it may come out. It probably likely will come out. But they do have the right to keep it secret.
Phil, I want to talk about another case that we mentioned at the top of the show. This is, we mentioned that these text messages that are emerging now from the Eric Garner case are 5 years later. We've just gotten new cell phone video just a couple weeks ago about the case of Sandra Bland, who died several days after being taken into police custody 4 years ago. We're going to take a listen to a clip from her footage now. Take a listen.
So you're threatening to drag me out of my own car?
Get out of the car!
And then you're going to stun me?
I will light you up. Get out.
Wow.
Now.
Wow.
Get out of the car.
Really, for a failure to signal. You're doing all of this for
a
failure to
signal. Get over there.
Phil, why are we just getting this video 4 years later?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how it leaked out. I know some of the attorneys involved in the case over the last 4 years were kind of surprised they had never actually seen it before. And what we see here is that the trooper, the state trooper, had no reason to fear for his safety. So I think it really goes to show you that one video doesn't tell the whole story, and two videos perhaps give us some different context. And it certainly would have been helpful for transparency, would have been helpful in terms of Trooper Encino's criminal case. He ultimately was not convicted. The charges, the perjury charge against him, was ultimately dropped in consideration for his agreement to not again work as a sworn law enforcement officer. But again, this peels back the curtain a little bit. You know, police officers, state troopers, deputy sheriffs, in the context of a citizen encounter on the street, in the context of a traffic stop, they're used to gaining control of the situation and barking out commands and having people follow through with exactly what they tell them to do. And any time that there's any push, what they perceive as pushback at all from a citizen, from a motorist in a traffic stop, the officer ends up escalating the situation as opposed to de-escalating quite often. And that's a problem. And that, again, is indicative of the way that police officers work. It's indicative of the police subculture.
And one of the things that we think about often is whether or not video footage will make a difference. And we've heard that argument often when it comes to body cameras that police wear. But at the top of the show, we also mentioned the killing of Oscar Grant in Oakland 10 years ago. And there was a new report that shows that an officer involved in the shooting instigated some of the events that actually led to his death. There was video footage as well in the death of Oscar Grant. So, Phil, the question here is, even when I think about Philando Castile, I think about Alton Sterling, I think about a number of Black Americans who've lost their lives on, who've been killed on video. Does video actually matter at this point? I mean, what does it tell us about the lack of indictments when there's still proof of behavior that potentially led to death?
Well, I think the videos do matter. It's still emerging technology in many respects. It's still only a few years now that all of us carry around video recorders in our smartphones. It's only been a number of years that we've had body cams, and it's been several decades that we've had dash cams. We've also got security and surveillance videos at private residences, businesses, and public places just about everywhere. So I think as time goes on, we're seeing it makes a difference. And where we're seeing that it does make a difference is that historically, the police have always owned the narrative in these situations. Anytime the police write a report, anytime the police have to testify, give a statement, they've always owned the narrative. It's been unusual that investigators and courts take seriously bystander accounts and victim accounts. And I think what we're seeing here is that sometimes the video evidence shows that police officers' accounts are simply factually inconsistent with the video evidence. So
I also want to bring in, and we're running up on the end of the segment here, Phil. I don't want to interrupt you, but I do want to ask Cindy about not just video accounts, but people who film these videos. In the case of Eric Garner, what do we know about the man who filmed the encounter?
So he's a 27-year-old man who was a friend of Eric Garner, and he filmed what was going on. His name is Ramsey Orta. He testified during this disciplinary trial. He's serving a state prison sentence right now. He has a long criminal history, so the defense really tried to attack his credibility. But the prosecutor's response was, you know, the video doesn't lie.
And the video goes beyond his personal criminal record, is supposed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Phil, as we wrap up on the last hour, on the last minute, sorry, of the segment here, if only we had an hour, where do you see this going? Are police going to become more transparent?
Well, again, we're dealing with thousands and thousands of agencies across the country and different laws in different places. But I think that that's what we've seen in the last 5 years, is that transparency and accountability is something that's being demanded. It's certainly being demanded by state legislatures and policymakers and activists. And I think going forward, we're going to see more of that. And the videos will help.
Phil Stinson is a professor and criminologist at Bowling Green State University in Ohio. Phil, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure, as always.
And Cindy Rodriguez is our star reporter at WNYC. Cindy, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.